Yes, of course. Burl Bearer. I've known a few writers who were rogues and vagabonds. And I'm Roger Moore. I didn't supply the microphone.
Live from the soapily beatific hills of Encino, California, where industry and nature work hand in hand to create a better life for all of us. The program... cack. Oh, boy. Welcome to College Radio. Program is produced by Magic and Matt Allen. That's his name on the Outlaw Radio Network. True Crime Uncensored. I am the legendary Burl Bear. Mark C.G. Boyer is here. Howard Lapidus is not here today. Kip Adada joins us. Hiya, Kip. His mic's not on, and neither is headphones, but aside from that, it's a good... It's actually...
It's nice
mic,
to
is, mic is partially on.
Yes, well, so is your career. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's discuss the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. You've probably heard of that. That goes back, it happened in 1929, murder of seven mob associates, part of a Prohibition-era conflict, supposedly, between two powerful criminal gangs in Chicago. Southside Italian gang led by Al Capone, Northside Irish gang led by Bugs Moran. Former members of the Egan's Rats gang were also suspected of having played a significant role, along with the Jewish Purple Gang. Why they were called Purple Gang, I'm not quite sure.
From Detroit.
Thank you. They used a... Thompson submachine guns.
Why don't we say hi to our guest?
We will in just a moment. Hi, guest. Hi, Deidre. How you doing?
Good.
Now, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, I was looking it up online, and I got about 127,000 pages of detailed investigation. Let's talk about what the standard version of the story is. You're Al Capone's beloved niece, who he would bounce on his knee and share his recipes with and that sort of thing. He did, Matt. He did share recipes, and they're in the book, Uncle Al Capone. So if you want to cook up some of Al's favorite recipes, they're in the book. Right.
Well, you know, since my book came out, my grandfather told me before he died, I had him till I was 34 years old, and my grandfather told me, you know, before he died, that no Capone had anything to do with the Valentine's Day Massacre. But I needed to get some proof before I could put that, you know, conclusion in my book. I'm now a speaker, and I go around and I do talks, and I have put together a few PowerPoint presentations. I can't show your listeners anything right now, but I can tell them this. On February 14th, 1929, there were seven people killed in the garage. They were put up against a wall, and they were shot down. Now, I have a very strange quirk of fate because my husband of today, his aunt was the sister of the so-called mechanic that was killed in the Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh, yeah, the guy with a little bit of a gambling problem.
Correct, Johnny May. And so Johnny used to come home and tell his family that Bugs Moran was getting really upset because police were stealing cases of alcohol off the back of the trucks, and they would go out and sell them and, you know, get some money. But, you know, still that wasn't enough proof. But, you know, February 14th, 1929, you know, these people were killed. March 20th through the 27th, seven consecutive days, my uncle appeared before the grand jury in the city of Chicago, and he gave testimony for 7 days. That is in the FBI files. I got that out of the FBI files. What I can't find is anything, any newspaper article about that. You know, it's like they've just been purged. I mean, somebody gives 7 days testimony before the federal grand jury. So that's one timeline. Then my uncle got scared because of Buzz Moran's, you know, people. So he purposely got himself arrested in the city of Philadelphia for carrying a gun.
To get him off the street?
Yeah. Correct. That was all set up ahead of time. You know, my grandfather told me that my uncle called, you know, the police there, said, I'm going to be in town with my bodyguard, and I'm going to be carrying a weapon. So they sentenced him on the spot instantly to a year in jail, and his bodyguard also. If you go to Eastern State Penitentiary, you will see Al Capone's cell. It's outside of the riot gates, and his bodyguard was right next door. Al Capone had total freedom. He could go down the street, get a cup of coffee, you know, do whatever he wanted to do while he was there. He got out in a year. I'm sorry, he got out in 7 months. He got out in March. What would that be? 8 months or something like that. He came back to Chicago. But let's back up. October 1929, the stock market crashed. My grandfather was running, you know, the business at that time. My grandfather opened up the very first soup kitchens the world has ever seen. And people would line up and he would feed them. That's October 1929.
You're talking about Al Capone right now.
Ralph Capone, my grandfather.
Oh, Ralph.
Al was in Eastern State Penitentiary at the time that the stock market crashed. But Al was still running everything. You know, I mean, my grandfather was present, but Al was still running things. So Al got out in March of 1930. On March 24th, 1930, Al Capone was named Man of the Year by Time magazine, and his face was the cover of Time.
Right, put that up on the website for you today.
All right, do you think Time magazine would put somebody on the cover if they knew he had killed him?
Well, they put Osama bin Laden on it.
Well, maybe so, but...
maybe so.
The testimony that, you know, things were different back then. Today, it's just a crazy world. I mean, it's like, I see things that I don't even believe. I went to the pet store the other day and get some food for my dog, and I came out. I thought I was in a reality show. These women were yelling at each other and pushing each other around. I mean, it was like right there in the parking lot.
Like Shaw's of Sunset.
But anyway, March 24th, 1930. And so everybody knew that Al Capone had nothing to do with the Valentine's Day Massacre. But there were six businessmen in the city of Chicago who they felt that, you know, it was beneath them to have an Italian immigrant, you know, sons be very powerful. In 1933, the World's Fair was going to be held in Chicago, and that was also their centennial. Chicago was formed in 1833. So in 1933, the World's Fair was going to be held in Chicago. Dignitaries from around the world were calling the Chicago City Council. They wanted to come to the World's Fair, but they wanted to meet Ralph Capone and Al Capone, and they wanted to be sure that they were there. These six businessmen just
freaked out.
I mean, their families came over on the Mayflower. You know, they're the deep pocket people that everybody knows their names.
I don't know the punchline to this story, but I will tell you that my father gave me a pin, which I still have, a little gold-plated pin from the 1933 Chicago World's Fair.
Right.
Yeah, I had some coins from that also. So in 1931, late in 1931, Al Capone got arrested for income tax evasion. All the racketeers, Lucky Luciano got arrested for income tax evasion. My grandfather got arrested for income tax evasion. All the other, you know, guys that got arrested for it got anywhere from 1 to 3 years. My grandfather served 3. Al Capone got sentenced to 11 years. Same amount of money, same years. Let me tell you something about 1931 and income tax. The income tax had not been around that long. And when it was first put into place, there was a provision in the income tax law that said you did not have to declare any income that you earned illegally, because that would be against your Fifth Amendment right.
Fifth Amendment right. Yeah.
Al Pacino started a movie as a lawyer in he was defending or trying a case, and Justice for All is the title of the movie.
Correct.
Thank you, Mark. And a joke was formed because of that movie. At the Hall of Justice, the only justice is in the hall.
That's
a good one. That was John Forsythe.
Oh, that's
rough.
So, you know, but these, all of these guys that were into bootlegging, you know, even Joe Kennedy, they didn't know that they had to pay income tax because it was earned illegally. Once they knew, they offered to pay it, but they wanted Al Capone away. So they put him away. Now, he filed an appeal, and it was, you know, turned down. His last, you know, go was to file a writ of habeas corpus. He was one day away. All of the papers had been filed. All of the evidence had been filed. And he was one day away from being taken out of Atlanta and taken back to the city of Chicago to go before the judge and jury with all this new evidence. That's when J. Edgar Hoover called up the first warden of Alcatraz, Warden Johnston, and he said, if you want to attract worldwide attention to, you know, how tough this prison is, transfer Al Capone there. And that's what they did. They transferred him to there. The last sign you see when you get on the ferry to go out to the island of Alcatraz is a quote by the first warden, Johnston. And it said, Alcatraz was opened to incarcerate irredeemable men, men who could never return back to society. That's not Al Capone. Al Capone got out of Alcatraz in 1939. He died in 1947. You cannot find one bit of media ink anywhere that he did anything wrong after he got out. But what I'm going around feverishly trying to do is show people. I mean, he was persecuted unjustly.
Good luck on that one. You know what they say, Lenny, as Lenny Bruce said, if you're going to fight for right, wear your old clothes.
I've got my old clothes on, and man, am I pushing against the.
Well, let's go back to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. We got a problem with your microphone there. Check your. No, it's not working. No.
When the myth becomes fact, print the myth.
Yeah. Going back to the investigation on this, when there was the one police car, or whatever, got sideswiped. I mean, you had witnesses who identified the guy who was missing one front tooth. The basic concept was that Al wanted to take care of a bump off Bugsy, and they mistook the optician or the optometrist or something, one of the other guys, for Bugs, and he wasn't even there at the time, and that these guys weren't real cops, or they could have been real cops, because the cops were, what was it you were saying, Kip? The cops were in tight with...
The
Al Capone owned the
alcohol off the back of Bugs Moran's truck.
Yeah, you said that.
I've got a picture of Bugs Moran hugging Al Capone. They were adversaries, but they both wanted to do a good job of giving people what they wanted. What was going on, and this is, you know, my grandfather telling me this, and he used this expression, Bugs's head was getting too big for his hat. Just wanted to take more and more and more business. And Al said, you know, there's enough